All right, folks, I'm Jaron Reimer. It's time for Sans Episode 8. This is Sans News Bites, annotated news update from the leader in information security training, certification, and research. This episode will cover the news and the landscape for April 18th, 2025. This is Volume 27, Number 30. And our table of contents of items that we're covering from the newsletter follows. And we do have one editorial comment that I thought would be perfect to share, because it is just one line, and one line worth mentioning. Here is our table of contents for this newsletter. Top of the news includes three items. They are: CVE program regains threatened CISA funding, plus nonprofit foundation; CISA publishes guidance following Oracle breach; and UK Information Commissioner's Office finds law firm following data theft. Items 2 and 3, I think, are quite interesting. We'll get to those in a bit. Here's the rest of the week's news. iOS zero-day flaw exploited in targeted attacks. Landmark Admin's 2024 breach doubles in scope. ActiveX will be blocked by default in Microsoft 365. Microsoft Windows NTLM flaw is being actively exploited. Critical RCE vulnerability in Erlang OTP SSH implementation. And CISA adds 2021 Sonic Wall vulnerability to known exploited vulnerabilities catalog. And I'll tell you what, if you haven't even patched this long for that, I will tell you that you should be ashamed of yourself. Before we get into the heart of the podcast, which is going to read the top paragraph of each of the items that I've just read above, I'm going to go ahead and give out some contact information, something that I've not done in any of the programs. So if you would like to leave comments, you may do so. I think for ease of convenience, I'll use my tech email address. So you can email or iMessage tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. That's tech at menvi.org. You can text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. Or you may call and leave a voicemail on the comment line at 888-405-7524. So, let's go ahead and get started with our newsletter. And let's see what news caught our attention. So we're going to start with top of the news and the first item. CVE program regains threatened CISA funding, Plus Nonprofit Foundation. On April 15th, 2025, research nonprofit MITRE announced that the U.S. federal government had not renewed its contract, meaning funding for the Common Vulnerabilities and Exposures, CVE, program and Common Weakness Enumeration, CWE, program would expire on April 16th, threatening breaks in those programs' services. However, hours after the announcement, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, executed the option period on the contract to ensure there will be no lapse in critical CVE services, extending the contract by 11 months. The following day, CVE board members announced the creation of a nonprofit CVE foundation to support the long-term sustainability and neutrality of a globally relied upon resource, supplementing the formerly single government sponsor, MITRE's Vice President Yosari Barum stated that lapses in the CVE and CWE programs could cause a deterioration of national vulnerability databases and advisories tool vendors' incident response operations and all manner of critical infrastructure. The CVE program has been in place since 1999, serving to identify, define, and catalog publicly disclosed cybersecurity vulnerabilities in a standardized system administered by over 450 CVE numbering authorities, CNAs, in 40 countries, cataloging over 40,000 new vulnerabilities in 2024 alone. And I'm just going to stop here a minute. Can you understand 40,000 or 400,000 or any high number of vulnerabilities? The news alert says 40,000, but just think about this. Even if it was 400,000, which it could be someday, that's a hell of a lot of vulnerabilities. And while it's 40 today, it wouldn't surprise me some years out that 400,000 would not be far off. I actually admire the fact that this execution was done quite succinctly and rightly so. And we'll see how the nonprofit aspect of this works, because we definitely don't want to lose it. That would definitely not be a good thing. Because people actually use it to gain the importance of updates. And speaking of updates, I might as well mention this now, but I spotted an article about Windows Update breaking more stuff and causing more problems. And it wouldn't surprise me if this made it into next Tuesday's Sans. And by the way, I will mention here too that some of these items that are in this newsletter may be blogged at jaredtech.help. CISA publishes guidance following Oracle breach. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, has published guidance on credential risks associated with potential legacy Oracle cloud compromise, urging action to protect organizations and individual users from further promise in light of almost a month of reports of a March 2025 data breach of Oracle Cloud, still broadly denied by the company. I'll stop here and say, of course! They've been saying this for a long time. And do we honestly expect them to change? Probably not. I mean, they are claiming that the server isn't even being maintained anymore. And they are saying that they do know that the credentials have been publicly made available. But do they honestly care? Return to text. While the latest statement from Oracle asserts, quote, Oracle Cloud, also known as Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI, has, in all caps, not experienced a security breach. The company confirms that usernames and encrypted / hashed passwords were stolen and leaked from two obsolete servers, and selections of leaked data have been independently confirmed as genuine by Oracle Cloud customers. CISA's guidance warns of the potential risks of credentials being exposed, reused across separate, unaffiliated systems or embedded, i.e., hard-coded into scripts, applications, infrastructure templates, or automation tools. Noting that threat actors might use these credentials for privilege escalation and lateral movement, cloud and identity management access, phishing and business email compromise, BEC, or for resale or targeted intrusions, possibly alongside prior breach information. Organizations should reset passwords, review code templates, scripts, and configuration files for hard-coded embedded credentials. Monitor authentication logs. Enforce phishing resistance MFA. And review security best practices. Users should update and strengthen passwords. Enable phishing resistance MFA. And be vigilant against phishing attempts. CISA offers a 24/7 operations center email address and phone number for reporting incidents and anomalous activity. Now, this is where the comment comes in from Murray, who is one of the Sans News Bites editors and contributors. And this, I think, sums it up perfectly. And he wrote, "Recent acquisition of a healthcare enterprise and reusable credentials stored on an orphan server. What could possibly go wrong?" Steve Gibson's famous phrase, when I last heard his podcast, formed in a question: what could possibly go wrong? So I'll read his comment again. It says, "Recent acquisition of a healthcare enterprise and reusable credentials stored on an orphan server. What could possibly go wrong?" I will let you guys ponder this. And you tell me what could possibly go wrong, besides a full compromise of the entire server and everything pilfered in it, which could include more usernames and passwords we don't know about, or anything else that could be proprietary. I guess we'll have to see how this goes. Oracle, get off your ass, do the right thing, and make sure that server is patched so nobody else can get in there and do damage. Having a server that is out there that you're just running on the internet doesn't make sense. Either patch it to the best of your ability or pull the thing offline. Between this and Ivanti and their product lines being patched in practically every newsletter that I've actually read, who's worse these days? I at least give Ivanti credit where credit is due. They are constantly patching their stuff when it is known that there's an issue. Yes, they've had a string of some pretty bad luck, but at least they've stepped up and patched what needs to be patched. Unlike Oracle, who can't even take responsibility for a server who they even said and confirmed that data was stolen from. And something tells me, if I remember correctly, that we still don't know how much data was actually pilfered from that attack. And can anybody tell me whether that server is actually still online these days? Ugh. I may not be sounding the greatest because I'm all stopped up, but I tell you what, stories like this might just stuff you up. I hope they figure it out. And now, it's time to move on to something. If that wasn't interesting enough, this might be. UK Information Commissioner's Office fines law firm following data theft. The UK Information Commissioner's Office, ICO, has imposed a £60,000 in USD $80,000 fine against DDP Law Limited following the theft of 32 gigabytes of personal data from its systems. The incident occurred in June 2022. The DDP was unaware of the data theft until the National Crime Agency noticed them that client information has been posted on the dark web. ICO said that DDP had not put appropriate measures in place to ensure the security of personal information held electronically. By the way, that's in quotes. According to the penalty notice, DDP told the commissioner that following an analysis of log files by a third-party consulting firm, there was evidence to suggest brute force attempts on its network as early as 19 February 2022. This occurred a further 12 times, and there were in total 400 attempts to gain access to the network. The brute force incidents were targeted at an administrator account for a legacy case management system, which was only available online sporadically. So, somebody was trying to get it work. And I do have to give the law firm credit this much. They didn't keep that server on just because. there's probably a necessity for them to bring it on. Return the text. At the time of the attack, the account was not protected with multi-factor authentication. While DDP was aware their systems were affected by a ransomware attack at the time, they did not believe that any data have been stolen after reviewing firewall and server logs. The firewall logs did not record egress. Data flows. DDP has said they disagree with the ICO's assessment and will appeal the decision. I'll tell you what, one of the things that you must understand, DDP, and I didn't put any of the comments in from any of the editors, but I'll just say this. One of the things you need to understand that your law firm, and any law firm for that matter, no matter where you are in the world, must have a client attorney privilege. This means that any client disclosing anything to you for whatever case you are dealing with, whether your client wins or loses the case, must be kept with the highest confidentiality possible. So, if you're using servers to have them upload data to you, then those servers must be protected at the level that you would protect your own home, i.e., take your keys with you, lock your door, make sure that if there's a deadbolt, that you can lock it from the outside if that's possible. I know that, for example, here we do have what would be considered a deadbolt, but it's a chain that goes into the door, so that's possibly not going to happen. But in other circumstances, you can lock and deadbolt your door. So why not lock and deadbolt your communications too, by using encryption to make it harder to read the data, for one, and for two, use a file transfer service that would allow customers to password protect the document within transition. So if you are using SendSpace, then you could, in the paid program, upload the files. You could send the password to the attorney, because now they don't send emails like they used to. So you will send an email with that password and that link, and in some cases you would want to expire that file so that it can't be downloaded should the link get loose and the password get loose. Or, if you're not using something like SenseSpace, then why don't you go ahead and password protect a directory where maybe there's a web page where you can allow files to be uploaded to, and you go get that, but it's not available to your average person who may stumble across your site. You have to have a dedicated username and password to be able to access that section for you to either upload or download data. So they would put something up for you to review, tell you to log into that portal, if you will, and go get that file. And then after your file is downloaded, you go and you tell them, I've got the file. They delete it off the server. The link becomes invalid. And that's how it should work. Seriously. At least I would do it one of those two ways. What say you? Now, ladies and gentlemen, that was just the iceberg. We're 30 plus minutes in, and we only covered the top of the news. Yes, just the top of the news. So let's see what we could do about covering the rest of the news. Because there's always something out there that might need your attention. Isn't there? Let's start covering the rest of the news by talking about iOS zero-day flaws exploited in targeted attacks. Apple has published security bulletins announcing fixes for two flaws, one in the core audio framework and one in the reconfigurable processing architecture core, RPAC component, both of which have reportedly been exploited as zero days against specific targeted individuals on iOS. CVE 2025-31200 CVSS score 7.5 would allow an attacker using a maliciously crafted media file to execute code when the core audio framework is processing the audio stream due to a memory corruption vulnerability. Discovery of this flaw is credited to the Google Threat Analysis Team and is addressed in the update by improved bounds checking. CVE 2025-31201 CVSS score 6.8 would allow an attacker with arbitrary read and write capability to bypass pointer authentication, PAC, due to a flaw in our PAC. This flaw was covered by Apple, and it was also discovered by Apple and is addressed in the update by removing the vulnerable code. Devices affected by these vulnerabilities are iPhone XS and later iPad Pro 13 inch, iPad Pro 13.9 inch, third generation and later, iPad Pro 11 inch, first generation and later, iPad third generation and later, iPad seventh generation and later, and iPad mini fifth generation and later. Machines running Mac OS Sequoia, all models of Apple TV HD and Apple TV 4K, and Apple Vision Pro. The flaws are fixed in iOS 18.4.1, iPad OS 18.4.1, tvOS 18.4.1, Mac OS Sequoia 15.4.1, and Vision OS 2.4.1. And this goes to show you that Apple really does care about trying to make sure that their software is as secure as possible. They don't disclose anything. And they actually discovered 2025 201 with that other one, and 200 and 201 in that 2025 set that I read above are tied together and patched just like it should be. Whether anybody has taken advantage of this, maybe they have, maybe they haven't. But Apple really does take its security seriously. Maybe other companies should learn from them, because if they don't, they could, in theory, be owned. Let's move on to the next one, shall we? Landmark Admins 2024 breach doubles in scope. Landmark Admin, a U.S. provider of administrative systems for insurance companies, is now informing regulators and affected individuals that a data breach first disclosed in October 2024 actually involved the theft of data belonging to over 1.6 million people, more than twice the originally estimated number. Landmark's IT vendor detected the breach and data exfiltration in May 2024 and immediately disconnected the affected systems and all remote network access. Investigation indicated that unauthorized system access occurred using valid credentials via the VPN. Landmark then detected a second breach and data exfiltration in June 2024, and further investigation showed that unauthorized access had occurred from May 13th to June 17th, 2024, including encryption of systems by the threat actor. While information varies by individual, the stolen data may include, and by the way, I'll say that this is in quotes, full name, address, social security number, tax identification number, driver's license number, government issued identification card number. So that's one item. It's a slashed item. So it is driver's license number / government hyphen issued identification card number. So that's one item. Picture of driver's license number / government issued identification card. Bank account and routing number. Medical and or health information. Health insurance policy number. Health claim date of birth. Life and annuity policy information. Life insurance policy application. And insurance benefit payment amounts and payees. Oof. Landmark's subsequent security measures include new hardening servers, a new firewall, a new external IP address from a new ISP, new domain controllers, account naming conventions and passwords, use of BitLocker, re-imaging and updates for printers, network switches and IoT devices, and a strengthened security posture, including training, restriction to points of access and MFA. The compromised system was disconnected and replaced rather than reconnected. Landmark is offering credit monitoring, identity theft protection services, and a $1 million insurance reimbursement policy to affected individuals. Must cost you a pretty penny, Landmark. Cybersecurity you must not have had? Whoops. Well, I don't want to go that far. They probably had some, but apparently not enough. At least they did the smart thing when they noticed that server was compromised. Instead of trying to rebuild it, they just bought a new one and said, well, this one's owned. We'll try again. And now they seem to be back up and operational. And again, this is all last year, but what a massive update. ActiveX will be blocked by default in Microsoft 365. Citing security concerns, Microsoft writes that ActiveX, which made its debut nearly 30 years ago, will be blocked by default in Microsoft 365 starting this month. The new default configuration disabled all controls without notification will replace the previous default setting, prompt me before enabling all controls with minimal restrictions. When users open a file containing ActiveX controls, they will see a message notifying them that the file contains blocked content with an option to learn more. When ActiveX is disabled, you will no longer be able to create or interact with ActiveX objects in Microsoft 365 files. Some existing ActiveX objects will still be visible as a static image, but it will not be possible to interact with them. Users who want to enable ActiveX controls can make that change in the Trust Center. More advanced stuff, I say, why are we having things that are executable in files? This is why Word has been such a boon for actors, because they can do a lot of damage because they know that people use things like Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other things. And by having executable items like ActiveX right there for you, they can probably do a whole bunch of stuff if they know the language to do so. I say bravo, Microsoft. It's about time you turn the thing off. And while you're at it, just disable scripting altogether in programs like Word. I understand Excel uses different types of things like scripts to be able to do formulas and things. And that you should only allow within an active worksheet. Don't allow executable things to run in Excel either. Only allow the scripts that make your program work, such as functions to add and subtract and multiply and divide, you know, between various cells and other items that I don't know that you already support without too much difficulty. Speaking of Microsoft, Microsoft Windows NTLM flaws is being actively exploited. So this is NTLM. There is one flaw here. So the actual headline is Microsoft Windows NTLM flaw is being actively exploited. And it says, researchers from Checkpoint have detected active exploit of a recently disclosed vulnerability in Microsoft NTLM, NT LAN Manager. The flaw, CVE 2025-24054, is a hash disclosure spoofing vulnerability. The attacks exploiting the flaw began just over a week after Microsoft released a fix on March 11th, 2025. Checkpoint says the attacker's first targets included government and private organizations in Poland and Romania. I say, get patching. And speaking of patching, how many times have we seen articles talking about remote code execution? Because the next article in this headline set covers that. And it is critical RCE vulnerability in Erlang OTP SSH implementation. Researchers Fabian Baumer, Marcel Mahirin, Marcus Brinkman, and Jorg Schwink from her university, Bochum, in Germany, have discovered a critical vulnerability in the Erlang OTP SSH implementation that could be exploited to achieve unauthenticated remote code execution. The researchers note that if your application uses Erlang OTP SSH to provide remote access, assume you are affected. The flaw could allow the attackers to access and manipulate sensitive data or create denial of service conditions. The issue is fixed in OTP 27.3.3, OTP 26.2.5.11, and OTP 25.3.2.20 as a workaround. Users can prevent access to vulnerable SSH servers with firewall rules. Get patching. It's about time if you use this product. And I believe we're on our final item today, which is that CISA is adding, or has adds, because it says CISA adds 2021 Sonic Wall vulnerability to known exploited vulnerabilities catalog, and citing evidence of active exploitation. The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, has added a vulnerability in SonicWall Secure Mobile Access, SMA, 100 series appliances to the known exploited vulnerabilities KEV catalog. The authenticated arbitrary command execution vulnerability was initially disclosed in September 2021, at which time SonicWall released updates to address the issue. SonicWall has updated the original advisory to include a warning about the active exploitation and an updated CVSS score. So that is the last item, and I will say, like I said at the beginning, if you haven't updated that in many years, I'd say you're fired. I know that those of us who are running 10 have to make a hard decision in regards to whether we want to update to Windows 11. And as our very own Sean Everest very nicely put it, what is Microsoft doing? He was actually thinking of upgrading, but when he saw that article that I posted that April updates broke stuff, he basically said, F it. And yes, I'm actually trying to keep this podcast as clean as possible from strong language. And while there may be a few words, I'm trying not to go all out with it, because I do want to try and make this as clean as possible. This is reviewing a newsletter and talking about the big stories and commenting. And I'm going to try my best not to use as many swear words as I possibly could in other contexts. With that being said, this is terrible. Anything added to this catalog that has not already been patched, you should be ashamed of. The editorial board of Sans News Bites: Brian Honan, Kurt Dukes, Chris Algie, David Holzer, Ed Scoutis, Gal Spencer, Jake Williams, Dr. Johannes Ulrich, and John Pescator. Others include Josh Wright, Kathy Bradford, Lance Spitzner, Lee Neely, Mark Weatherford, Moses Frost, Suzanne Vautrinot, and William Hugh Murray. Sands Institute is located at 11,200 Rockville Pike, Suite 200, North Bethesda, Maryland, 20852. I'm Jared Reimer. I hope that you've enjoyed this edition of the news. We will be back either on Wednesday or Thursday with another edition of Sans. Email, iMessage, tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Text or WhatsApp, 804-442-6975, or leave a comment on the comment line at 888-405-7524. And until next time, everybody, please stay safe, update your software, and we'll see you all on another edition of the program next time. So long.